Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1988. The topic is mindset, and the title is Developing Long-Term Consistency. I was talking with one of my clients. They have over a 10-year competition history, so they've been very consistent, and we were talking about just the chaos of life, and it even brought back some of the chaos in 2020, but they're currently going through a little chaos. That's one of those kind of once in a couple years type of level of chaos, and they're not struggling in the sense that they're not going to continue. They're just struggling in that they're facing some new challenges and having to find new ways of working through and around those challenges. In our discussion, we were talking about how they could be doing this for at least 10 years. Their first competition was a little over 10 years ago, but they've been lifting and eating healthy for a lot longer than that. They had to get ready for that first competition. We were just saying kind of what it comes down to in regards to having long-term consistency, to the point that they're at a place in life where eating healthy and exercising regularly isn't going to stop. They're not in fear during this new stress that they're just going to fall off and not train or not eat healthy. They don't see that as an option, meaning it's become who they are. It's as much as they would breathe every day, they're going to eat healthy and exercise. And we were talking about how the process in which getting them to that place, kind of what that looked like and just the mindset of it. It was more so just a chit-chat. But they train a lot of people themselves. And we often have talked about trainer aspects, one of them being how do you motivate people. This person has been a highly motivated person their entire life. They have a hard time understanding how somebody doesn't want to do things that make their life better, to the point where, like, we even had conversations before and they're like, what the hell is wrong with these people? You know, like, why would you not do this? And we just kind of laugh. But the underlying, like, the goodness of it was they are wanting to, and myself included, like, we want to help the people we work with be their best self. So it's important to understand what their perspective is, so that way you can kind of take them from that perspective to a healthier place to develop the consistency. One of the phrases that the client said that I really liked and I wanted to expand on in today's podcast was, I want what doing it gives me more than what I want not doing it gives me. It's probably a more eloquent way of me wording that, but I just liked it. I want what doing it gives me more than what I want not doing it gives me. And that is something I think is worth a little bit of a discussion, because it can highlight some aspects of consistency that'll help develop long-term consistency. Is trying to understand what does doing it give you? So if you're wanting to be more consistent with eating healthy, if you want to be more consistent with exercise, if you want to be more consistent in financial aspects, in relationship aspects, in whatever it might be in life, if you want to develop consistency, there has to be a value to doing it. Whatever it is that you should be doing, there has to be a value to it. And then that becomes kind of the motivation to do it, because you get the outcome of that value. A lot of people struggle to develop initial consistency because they don't see initial value. If I want to eat healthy in order to lose body fat, if I eat a healthy breakfast today, a healthy lunch, by the time dinner comes, there's really nothing of value yet. This is what most people see, right? You didn't lose a significant amount of weight by just eating two healthy meals and maybe denying an afternoon snack when you typically would have one. There's not much like tangible outcome there. You would have to eat healthy for like many days to maybe start to have digestive health and a little bit better energy. Maybe you have a little more energy for workouts, a little more energy during the day. You find that that leaves you in a better mood. You have better interactions with people because you're not so exhausted. And you're like, hey, I'm starting to feel something. Maybe you do it for a week or two and you lose a little bit of weight on the scale. And that's another tangible outcome. The more you're consistent, the more you get those tangible aspects. But there is the initial degree of consistency that has to happen without an initial reward. A lot of people struggle to get past that initial phase. They struggle to get past the initial reward to then be more consistent. Other people, they'll have done enough to see a reward, but it came at a really high expense. Maybe the diet structure they were following was very restrictive. They had to eliminate entire food groups. They had to avoid foods they liked. They had to eat foods they didn't like. It maybe even cost them some social interactions. There was a lot of cost. There was a lot of struggle. There was a lot of friction. So although they got tangible results, it wasn't outweighing. It wasn't more beneficial than what it was costing them. So again, going back to what my client said is, I want what doing it gives me more than what I want not doing it gives me. For people who've gotten tangible results, but it came at a high expense. Like I said, very, very restrictive in food, very restrictive in maybe social. Like I've had clients who get ready for bodybuilding shows thinking that they can't go hang out with friends because they're like, well, every time my friends go out, they end up just drinking and I don't want to drink. I'm like, well, then don't drink. Like, you can be there and be friends. Just order a diet soda, you know, or get some water. And, you know, if somebody asks you anything, just say, hey, I'm drinking water tonight, but I'm here and I'm having fun. I really enjoy your company and I just want to hang out. If they give you some shit, give them some shit back. You know, don't be a pushover. So, but there are options. When people go out to eat at restaurants, you can just order some protein. You know, ask for a meat that is grilled with minimal oil, and then get some vegetables that don't also have oil or cheeses or whatever else on it. Just get some protein and some vegetables that are grilled. And there you go. You're out with friends. You're being social. You're eating something. But you're not breaking your diet. There are ways to do it. It can be challenging. It can be a little awkward at first. I know a lot of my clients and myself, like, I've taken food to restaurants, which I'm sure some people say is like stupid or a no-no. But screw you. I wanted to eat when I wanted to eat and I wanted to be with friends. So that was my choice. And if the restaurant didn't like it, I don't care. They never kicked me out. I typically would usually buy like a drink or something small. Or I would just point out, I remember one time I went with some friends and the waiter said, you're not eating. And I said, nope, but you get the money from everybody else that's with me. And they just kind of smirked and kept going, you know. So it's possible to still have the social life when you have food restrictions. But it is a challenge, that's for sure. So anything that we want to be consistent with, there's going to be a cost to it. But hopefully there's also going to be a reward to it. The key is to have the reward be greater than the cost. One of the ways that you can increase the value of the reward, and this is what my client and I discussed, was to see it beyond the tangibles. If I'm trying to build muscle, that is a slow process, very slow process. So if you're waiting to see improved photos, if you're waiting to see improved measurements, if you're doing body, like an in-body scan, DEXA scan, hydrostatic weighing, bod pod, if you're doing some type of testing like that to see a tangible difference via data, you're going, it's a slow road. It's hard to be consistent with processes that are slow. Fat loss is relatively slow. Muscle building is even worse. It's more slow. Increasing strength can be incredibly slow once you get past the beginner gains of improving technique. So a lot of the processes, a lot of the goals that people listening to this podcast would want to achieve, they're slow. If we look at just the tangibles as the reward, that often doesn't seem like enough. So two ways that we can increase the value of doing it. So that way, doing it outweighs not doing it, is to consider the improvement in self-identity and the development of a sense of hope. So the improved self-identity, I think we all can understand that we feel better about ourselves when we feel like we're doing things we quote-unquote should be doing. When we have a goal in mind and we do actions towards the goal, we feel better about ourselves. That's a good feeling. And if you've come from a place of hating yourself or being very disliking of yourself, when you start doing things quote-unquote right, when you start doing progressive behavior actions, you start to feel better, and feeling better about yourself, even to the point where you can actually feel good about yourself, is an amazing contrasting feeling to hating yourself or to thinking that you're always a failure or that you'll never be able to do it. If you've had negative self-feelings and now you start doing proper actions towards your goal, you start having good self-feelings, positive self-feelings, that can actually be a motivator and a sense of increased value in doing what you're doing. Even separate from the tangible outcomes, if you exercise and eat healthy on a regular basis, you're going to feel good about yourself. Most people, and I'm sure there's some exceptions, but most people, if they can honestly feel that they are eating healthier than they used to, and that they're being more active than they used to, they're going to feel better about themselves. And that feeling of feeling better about yourself is a great feeling. And it can start to be a separate motivator beyond just the tangibles to say, I'm not going to skip breakfast. I'm not going to skip lunch. I'm not going to eat crap for dinner. I'm not going to miss my workout, because that'll make me feel like that loser self that I used to be. That'll make me feel like it's a slippery slope. And now all of a sudden I'm going to miss multiple meals. I'm going to miss multiple workouts. I'm going to go back to the way I used to be. To avoid the way you used to be, once you've started to feel better about yourself, is absolutely a value. And it's a reason why you would continue to do things, the right things, the good things, long term. So when you're considering doing actions that help progress you forwards towards a goal, don't just think, oh, you know, have I seen any weight loss yet? Have I seen any muscle building yet? Have I seen any strength? Like, what have I seen yet? What are the tangibles that I've gotten yet? Recognize that it's beyond just the tangibles. How good do you feel about yourself when you do the right things? Remember that feeling. Celebrate that feeling. Actually, like, take a moment to soak in that feeling. And recognize that whether I'm getting tangibles or not, this feels good. It feels good to feel good about myself. To believe in myself. That's a good feeling. The second value that the client and I discussed was the sense of hope. Often before we set a goal, we are in a place that we don't want to be, or a place that's suboptimal. And the idea of the goal is that it will bring us to a better place. The goal itself is a sense of hope, saying things can change. If I want to lose weight, if I'm tired of being overweight, and I'm like, man, my goal is to lose 30 pounds, you automatically feel better. You feel better just saying it out loud. By just setting a goal, you feel better because you're like, what would it be like to be 30 pounds lighter? If you grew up skinny and your goal is to build muscle, walk around on the beach jacked, you know, showing off a great body, that gives you hope because now you're like, what would it be like? You can start to imagine it. You can start to explore what those feelings might be, and damn, do those feelings feel good compared to what you're feeling now. When we do the right actions and we're consistent with the right things, we keep that hope alive. The hope that we had when we started the goal is sustained and kept alive by every action we take along the way to reaching the goal. So when we think about how we can increase the value of doing it, whatever it is, whatever you're needed to reach your goal, whatever the actions are, how we can increase the value of doing it so that way doing it is better than not doing it, is to remember that it's beyond just the tangibles. It's beyond just the things we can see and feel in regards to like feeling in our clothes or feeling in our body like changing. It's also like the emotional feelings, the internal mental feelings. When we're consistent, we have a better self-identity. When we're consistent, we keep the hope alive from when we first ever set the goal. So when you're struggling with consistency, I would suggest that you take a second and soak in those feelings and just give your time to process those feelings when you do a proper action, when you eat the right breakfast, when you get a workout in that day and you're driving home or walking home from the gym. Or maybe your gym is in your home, so you're just kind of chilling out, relaxing afterwards, letting your body calm down. Soak it in. How does it feel? How good do you feel about yourself having done a positive step? How exciting is it to know that you're one step closer? Those are good feelings. Good feelings. And if you take a second to process those, if you take a second to feel those, if you take a second to value those, that can help increase your long-term consistency. Because whether you see something in the workout or not, whether you see a change in one good meal or not, you're going to feel it. You're going to feel good having done the right thing that day. A challenge that we can face that is something that's worth exploring is considering, what do you get when you don't do it? So we talk about the value of doing it, but what's the value of not doing it? For some people, the value of not doing it is they're already stressed enough. And when they think of exercise, they're like, that's just more stress. I'm tired, I'm overwhelmed. I just don't need more stress. Even if it's good stress, the stress of a workout it's going to create a good outcome, but it's still more stress. So by not doing the workout, I avoid some extra stress. To identify that is great because now you can ask yourself, well, what are some other ways that I can avoid stress or ways I can reduce stress? So that way I have more stress margin and I can actually get my workouts in. I can actually take the time to prep the right food. What are ways that we can reduce stress? There's actually a lot of them. Moments of meditation. I know that sounds really dorky, but you can just think of it as quietness, where you just take some time during the day and just turn off all stimuli, you know, and just sit in silence, maybe even turn off the lights, sit in darkness. I've talked about this in a few podcasts here and there, and it sounds borderline psychotic, but it actually helps. especially whenever my life has been in the highest levels of stress, I will take a second, like after I go to the bathroom, you know, if I go to the bathroom, I have to pee or something, I'll just set a 2-minute timer, turn off the lights, sit on the edge of like a shower or stand on the, like somewhere. Like if I'm in a public restroom, I'm not going to do this, but you know, maybe a restroom at home or somewhere where it's not, you know, completely unreasonable and completely weird beyond what it already is. But I'll set a 2-minute timer, turn off the lights. There's no sounds. Hopefully. but I'll just soak in the silence for 2 minutes. Close my eyes. I often try not to think of anything. I do square breathing, which is a variation of a breathing technique that you can use to lower blood pressure. And it does help reduce stress. But you focus on your breathing. You would breathe in for 4 count, hold it in for 4 count, breathe out for 4 count, then hold it out for 4 count. A little bit of panic there when you're holding that out breath, but it helps you then get a bigger intake on the next breath, and it really starts to bring down the blood pressure. So I'll save you from counting it on the podcast here, but literally you would breathe in 1, 2, 3, 4. And then you would hold it for that same 4 count, breathe out for that same 4 count, then hold it out for that same 4 count. Now, when you're counting and you're doing that slow breathing, it kind of gives the brain something to do. So you tend not to get like kind of sidetracked mentally thinking of something that would actually continue your stress. It helps to bring the stress levels down. It helps to calm the body. So even just 2 minutes of doing that, it is remarkable the change that that will have on blood pressure and on stress. Absolutely remarkable. If you don't believe me, try it once, and you'll probably be hooked. But that's a great way to do it. Another way to reduce stress is to plan your day. You can either plan it the night before or the morning of. Say, what are the 1, 2, or 3 big things I got to do this day? When am I going to do them? How long are they going to take? And then say, okay, if I can get these 1, 2, or 3 big things in, it's a good day. Regardless of whatever else I can get in, you know, maybe I'll also try to do dishes, do some laundry, call a friend, send a few emails, whatever you can, like small stuff. But if you get those 1, 2, or 3 big things in and you're like, damn, if I can do this, it's a good day, then you're starting the day proactive and kind of like on a mission. And that reduces the anxiety and stressful feeling of the day because you're not waiting to see what will happen. You're going out and making things happen. So that's a huge mind shift. Third one that I'll leave you with, and then we'll move on, is to do what's called brain dumping. And typically this is best at the end of the day, maybe before bed, is to have a journal and say, you know, what are my biggest fears? What are my biggest struggles? What was my biggest frustrations for the day? Just get out some negative emotions. Those are typically the questions I start with, is like, what was I most frustrated with today? I'll write that out. And I don't even have an answer. Like, I most often don't answer my problems. but I'll just write, what was I most frustrated with today? And or like, what's my biggest fear coming up? Like, I'll give you a little insight is I have flown before in my life, but I really don't like flying. It's a false sense of lack of security, like a lack of control. I know that in my life, I have very little control over very little things. I'm well aware of that. That's why I give it to God and trust in Him. And I do that pretty damn well most of the time, but I don't like elevators. This is probably like me being too honest. I'm a little weirdo. But I don't like elevators because if you get stuck in an elevator, what the hell are you going to do? You can't go to the bathroom anywhere. There's no food. And it's like you just freak out and you hope that people can get to you in time. And there's nothing to do. You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. So you're just trapped. There's no control. You can't control the environment. Same thing on a plane is I've flown before, but I don't like it. And I have a couple plane flights coming up. And I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it. So if I start to feel a little overwhelmed with like, oh my gosh, like when I get on there, I hope I don't have a panic attack. I hope I don't start breathing really heavy. I hope I don't freak out, need to get off the plane. But by then I can't get off the plane. Then what am I going to do if I can't get off the plane, but I want to get off the plane? Ugh, get overwhelmed, right? So I'll write that down on the journal and just be like, still fearful of the plane, hoping that'll calm down. And then I do every once in a while, like I'll list out what's okay on the plane. I can go to the bathroom when I need. There's food when I need. My wife is actually going to be able to come on these flights with me, so she'll be there when I need. So why would I want to get off the plane, right? I try to remind myself is, what would I get off the plane for? Mostly what I would want to get off the plane for, I have with me. So what am I freaking out about? What am I worried about? What do I want that I can't just have? And I try to keep that in mind. It still flares up, but that's where like the journaling helps. So those are things I'll journal about, is frustrations, fears, things that are stressing me out. And I just put it on paper. And then I'm like, okay, you know, there you go. Wrote them out. Got it out of my brain. I'm going to go to bed. Tomorrow morning, those are my problems again. But they're not my problems now. Let me just get some sleep. And those are kind of a couple of tips to help reduce stress. But if you're struggling with consistency of doing an action, it could be because doing the action is just more shit that you have to do in the day. And one of the ways to help that be easier is to just reduce stress through anything, any of the tactics I mentioned or anything else. You also might not be consistent with new habits or good habits because they take time, right? I don't have time to cook. That's complete bullshit once you learn that there's other options. But for what your perception of cooking is, that's completely true. You might think, I literally don't have time to eat healthy because of what you believe eating healthy is. The only ways that you know how to eat healthy might actually take a lot of time. So it's actually 100% true. But then as you learn, like, oh, psh, you know, okay. Like for me, one of my quick meals during the day is to open two pop-top cans of tuna, microwave a pouch of rice, jasmine rice, which takes 90 seconds. I do warm up the tuna at 30 seconds. So while the microwave is, while the rice is microwaving, if that's a term, I don't know, if that's the active verb of microwave, but while it's microwaving, I'll pop the tuna open, put it in a bowl. I mash it up with my fork because I don't like the big chunks because I actually don't like tuna, but it's easy and cheap. So I'll smash it down with my fork. When the rice is done, I'll heat the tuna up for 3 minutes, and then I'll put the rice on the tuna, and I use variable types of moisture, depending on where I'm at in my dieting phase. Like sometimes I'll use like a fat-free, calorie-free thing to add like dressing. Sometimes I'll use something that has a little more calories in it, depending on whether I'm trying to add calories in the meal or not add calories in the meal. But that's something I can prepare and make in 2 minutes, like literally maybe 2.5 minutes. And then I can eat it in about 3 to 4 minutes when I don't look at anything else or don't do anything else. So I put my phone face down, just sit there and eat. So I can get that whole meal prepped and eaten in under 10 minutes for sure. And that's something that's healthy and quick. Another option I have right now is I'll take about 10 ounces of a juice. I'll use orange juice. I've also been mixing it up with some different type of fruit juices. But 10 ounces of juice, scoop in 2.5 cups. Two and one quarter cup of Greek yogurt and a 25 grams of protein, vanilla protein scoop. So I'll mix that all up into a blender bottle and just drink that. It's 500 calories, 65 grams of protein. Great little shake, quick something there. That takes, again, about maybe 2.5, 3 minutes to prep. And then I'll just drink that, you know, either at that moment or I'll just drink it as I go through the next couple activities. So maybe it takes me about an hour to drink it, but at least I have it and I'm just sipping on it as I go through. But there are tons of options for nutritional ways to save time. And then planning your day, believe it or not, that actually saves time because then you're not like meandering about with things that aren't as meaningful. So that can save time. There's a lot of other ways to save time. If you have access to things like Instacart, they can do shopping, grocery shopping for you, which saves a little bit of time per week. Amazon can send you things so you don't have to go to the store, which can save you time if you need to get things. I also do a lot of multitasking and combinational activities, which helps kind of make things go faster if you have to do the laundry, do dishes, do some odds and ends around the house. So anything like that, I always try to streamline and figure out ways to multitask. But it's something to consider that, okay, if I'm not doing a good thing for me thing, if I'm not doing it because it takes time, I don't want to just keep not doing it as a way to save time. I want to actually try to eliminate things that aren't as important for me or reduce things that aren't as important for me so I now can have the time margin to add in things that are more significant, like the actions towards my goals. Then maybe the last thing I'll look at is if doing it makes you doubt yourself. So you lack confidence doing the thing. So maybe you're supposed to go to the gym and you're like, I do not know what I'm doing in the gym. I feel like an idiot. I am so frustrated. I'm so just unsure of myself. Well, one of the things you can think of is smaller starts. I've had clients do this, is where if they're intimidated by the gym, what I'll do is, and like there's variations to this, so this isn't a singular option, but you can, instead of going to the gym and trying to lift weights, just go to the gym and walk on a treadmill for 30 minutes. Can you just go inside the gym and do something that's relatively easy? You're not going to probably screw that up. So don't try to pick like crazy elliptical or some cardio machine you've never seen before. Just literally go to a treadmill or something that you feel comfortable-ish enough and just move for 30 minutes and then leave. But you got in, you saw what the environment was like, you saw what the people were like, and then you do that a couple days, a couple weeks. Maybe you even have to do that for 2 months, 3 months. And you're like, okay, I have a degree of consistency here. I kind of know what's going to happen when I go in. I know what the people are going to be doing. I kind of have an idea of familiarity. Now, can I go find some machines that are guided? Not plate loaded. They already have the plates, like the weight plates on them. Those are called selectorized machines, where the weight plates are already on them. Can I go move a few of those around? Because typically they have pictures and instructions, and they can only move in one pathway, meaning you can't accidentally move it sideways when it should be going up and down. It literally is only going to move in one direction. So just move that in that one direction. So now you've done cardio for a little bit, and you go pick, you can pick one machine that day, two machines, or even three machines, and say, can I do a machine today? I'm just going to do a couple sets of 10. I don't even give a crap if it's hard. I don't care what the weight is. I just want to move it around for 10 times. Can I take a breath, look around for about a minute, move it around 10 more times, look around for about a minute, move it around 10 more times, and go home? It's just small steps. In anything you want to do, like I used to play musical instruments, a couple different musical instruments. And trying to learn new musical instruments can be very intimidating, very frustrating, especially when you are already good at one instrument and then you try to learn another one and it's intimidating and frustrating and you can't figure it out. That is so frustrating because you're like, what the hell? I can play this other one totally fine. This one is ridiculous. So for me, I played a lot of woodwinds. And then when I tried to play the guitar, that was really weird. I'm left-handed and I had to learn from a right-hand version of a guitar, like people show me right-handed, and that was kind of awkward and weird. So I kind of had to like figure that out. I ended up playing a right-handed like guitar upside down. But anyhow, I figured out how to play it. But it was started by just playing on one string, and I would move my hand on the fret to make the different notes. And I found that actually easier to move the hand that has to like hold the string down to change the notes. I would only pluck one string, but I would move my hand to play different notes. I found that easier than trying to hit different strings. I had trouble hitting different strings. Now, at first I was attributing it to, I'm blind in one eye, so I don't have any depth perception. So if I'm looking at my hand, trying to move my hand up or down the width or the distance between the strings, I couldn't tell what that was. So I'd fumble and miss strings all the time. So it was trying to figure that out. And then I realized I'm mostly never going to be looking at my hand anyhow. I'm going to be looking at the fret hand. So I'd be looking at the fret hand and then realizing, holy crap, I'm never even actually looking at the hand that plucks the strings. So it was figuring that out. But it was just starting on one string. Eventually, I would go back and forth between two strings. Then I started to, you know, expand from there. But the idea, whether it's, you know, a musical instrument or whether it's going to the gym and starting with cardio, is start with small steps. Start with things that stretch your comfort a little, but not so much that you're not going to do it. It's like, okay, I could do that. I'm a little uncomfortable, but I could do that. That's where you want to start. And then as that becomes comfortable, what's the next thing that's a little uncomfortable, but you can do it? Then do that. So if we look at that statement, I want what doing it gives me more than I want what not doing it gives me. We talked about how to increase the value of what it gives you. Not only the tangibles, the outcomes, but improve self-identity and the sense of hope. And then we talked about trying to find substitutions for what not doing it gives you. Find other ways to reduce stress. Find other ways to save time. Find small steps that you can do that get you over your self-doubt or your lack of confidence. That's the kind of a breakdown and a viewpoint of how to develop long-term consistency. If you can believe that doing it will improve your self-identity, provide a renewed sense of hope, and will produce a tangible outcome, and if you believe doing it can give you those things, and that those things are greater than the reward of not doing it, that's how you'll become more long-term consistent. So I hope the podcast gave you some ideas, gave you some thoughts that you can now work through. If you have any questions, if you need anything, just reach out to me. You can go to our website, www.brutalirongym.com. You can always message me on the bottom of the homepage. Even if you just want to send some feedback, maybe you don't have a question. You're just like, oh, wow, I really like this, and I want to share a little background story. Great. I don't mind. I love that. I love hearing from people who listen to the podcast. It's super motivational. On Podbean, I can see where the podcast has been downloaded from, and it is absolutely freaking awesome. So to give you a little bit of an insight here is, let me refresh that page so I can get in there. So right now it is April 11th. I'm actually recording this on April 11th. I think you're going to be listening to it on the 13th. But so far in the month, if we look at the world, it's been downloaded. The podcast has been downloaded in the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, Spain, Sweden, United Arab Emirates. So sorry, I struggled on that one. Belgium, France, Singapore, Hong Kong, Ghana, Belarus, Romania, Lebanon, Israel, Canada, Denmark, Iran, New Zealand, and some other ones I can't pronounce, Brazil, Switzerland, Colombia, Ecuador, Georgia, Morocco, Russia, South Africa, the list goes on. It's been super cool. Like, we get a lot of downloads in Sweden, which is just fun and weird. We get a lot of downloads in Germany, which is awesome, Australia. So it's super, super, super fun and exciting to see that people from all over the world are listening to the podcast. So if you have any feedback, if you have anything that you ever want to say, I would love to hear it, because it's just fun to know not only the data that I see on Podbean, but also to hear some names and hear some stories. That is very motivational to keep this going. So as for long-term consistency, I mean, I've made 1,988 of these. I would love to continue to make them. I do enjoy them, but it is motivating to know when people are being benefited from them. So if you ever want to reach out, I genuinely appreciate it, and I appreciate your time in doing that. But you can always do that on our website, www.brutalirongym.com. If you like the podcast, please share the podcast. The more people we share it with, the more people we can help. If you like the podcast, please consider donating to support the podcast, which you can do on the website. And if you like the information we share in the podcast, you can find more from us in our social media channels. You can find us and follow us on Instagram and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.